Welcome to the Blue Economy Podcast, presented by Rhode Island, the Ocean State. I'm your host, David Hirschman, and we're coming to you once again in a socially distanced way via Zoom. Our guest on this episode is Captain John Conrad. John is the founder and publisher of G Captain, which is the maritime industry's leading trade publication, with over 600,000 unique visitors each month. He's also the CEO of freight data startup G-Ship, and an advisor to Sea Ahead, and is the author of a book about the Deepwater Horizon disaster. We're going to talk a bit about John's career and also get his take on how the COVID-19 pandemic could end up spurring innovation in the global shipping industry. Welcome to the podcast, John. Let's just start a little bit about your background. Tell me a little bit about your journey from New York Maritime College to becoming a ship captain to the startup world and publishing. You know, what's the through line of all these things that you've been working on?
Right. It goes back actually to high school in Mamaroneck, New York. I had a real passion for sailing in the sea and also technology, computers, and unfortunately, my guidance counselor in the mid-90s said, there's no future in computers, John. So I decided I'm going to be a ship captain. And there aren't too many people who decide to go ship captain who are interested in technology. So when I graduated SUNY Maritime College, I worked on the supertankers up in Valdez, Alaska. But I soon got recruited for these exploratory drill ships. These are the most technologically advanced ships in the world. They cost almost $1 billion to build these ships. And they run off satellite positioning. We have acoustic beacons. And it's all in order to drill deeper and deeper into the ocean. My first job was very lucky. This entrepreneurial family, the Ambani brothers, had kind of risked their entire family fortune on bringing this American drillship over to drill for natural gas. And we tried for 6 months and didn't find anything. And suddenly, right when the contract was over, we discovered 4 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. It made the Ambani brothers the richest men in India. And the entrepreneurial spirit, I'd talk with these guys on the ship, and they said, if I was American, if I was you, I'd go to Silicon Valley. So I moved to Silicon Valley, and I did a number of startups, including G-Captain, which has since become the largest, most visited maritime website in the world. And it's led to a lot of opportunities, including writing my book about the Deepwater Horizon explosion and joining Sea Ahead and learning about all these entrepreneurial endeavors happening around the world.
And so the G-Captain website originally came from, a site about skiing, right?
Right. I didn't think anyone would be interested in ships. So we launched a ski website. And then within a few years, we had raised $6 million from venture capitalists for the ski website. And we took helicopter journeys around the world, and we had a big ski house, and it was a big endeavor. But then the snow melts. So in the summer, I'd already learned how to build. Right now, you just press a button on WordPress and you suddenly have a blog. Back then you had to build the server with Linux commands. So I had the server, I had this knowledge. So I built the G Captain and I went to the venture capitalists who, many were my friends in Silicon Valley. And I said, hey, I want to do the same exact thing for shipping. They said, we don't understand shipping, John. It's a pass. So I went to the shipping community, ship owners, and they said, well, we really think that the future is going to be paper, continue to be paper magazines. And what was, the paper was expensive. Back then you had magazines that were essentially press releases, which you could get for a minimum charge. But real hard news, you had to subscribe and it would cost over $1,000 a year for the least expensive. So mariners and shipping executives 15 years ago had no access to the news, David.
And when you say the news, you mean the kinds of news stories that you guys do now, just about sort of shipping around the world and kind of what's happening?
Right. What's happening in shipping? News about various incidents, big moves made by big players in the shipping community, stories from just sailors, and any information about what's going on in the industry. And my real desire from day one is, we're not going to be the best news source. We're not going to be the most in-depth articles. What we're going to do is tie the international community together. So it's a very segmented industry. The tanker guys stay in their lanes. They don't go to Navy conferences. The Navy guys don't go to cruise ship conferences. Cruise ship guys don't go to fish farming conferences. The idea, G Captain, was we can all learn from each other, break down those industry borders, but also international borders. You know, get everyone reading the same news, talking about the same things.
So, and you have full-time editorial staff. How many people kind of work on G Captain these days?
That's a little bit of a secret, but we're a small staff. We have the 5 full-time guys and a lot of freelancers and people who contribute articles.
And so what's the tie between G Captain and G Ship, and kind of what's your ultimate mission with both of them at this point?
Well, I saw this inflection point, right? So I had tried to raise capital when I started G Captain and utterly failed. And it wasn't my lack of business ability, because we raised millions for the ski site. And years later, we raised millions again for a epic Hollywood budget movie with the skiing. And then I knew that AIS and this data, I know you had Cargo Metrics on last week, the incredible things that they're doing and gathering this data. So we created the very first app for AIS data. But again, we could not find investors, and we were ahead of marine traffic, which ended up, has become the biggest source. Without that capital, you cannot fund these ideas. But what I saw was interesting. A small company named Flexport started in New York City, which has, New York and Stamford, Connecticut are the most vibrant shipping regions in the U.S. And this Columbia grad student, Ryan Peterson, had this idea for a website, and he pitched it to people around New York, and they told him the same thing they told me. I don't know about this idea. We're going to pass. So he picked up and moved to Silicon Valley and decided this isn't a maritime app anymore. We're not going to hire maritime people. This is a logistics app, rebranded as logistics. And now they're one of these unicorns, multi-billion dollar companies.
Huge company, yeah.
Enormous. So these venture capitalists came to me and they said, John, we know we missed the boat. We should have listened. We're interested now in investing in maritime innovation. So started working on G-Ship, but also Black Sail. I was teamed up with MIT startup Black Sail, which is run by a former researcher at MIT Robotics Lab, Dr. Saad. And they're using all of these algorithms and data in order to improve shipping. And people think this AI and machine learning and data is going to replace captains, but they actually hired me, and I'm invested in this project in order to not do that. Because what's important about technology is it's not about the tech itself. That's just a tool. It's about people, then ideas, then technology. And that's a quote from John Boyd, who was built the F-16, F-18, and Top Gun schools, one of our best military technology thinkers. You have to put those people first. And that's what we're trying to do with G-Ships and Black Sail. And now that we have venture capital support, now that they're listening, now that Flexport has woken them up, it's a new opportunity to go out and build a better shipping industry.
Cool. Well, so let's get into that a little bit about what that is. It's hard to talk about just about any industry right now without talking about COVID. Can you tell me a little bit about how you see the pandemic affecting shippers in the maritime world, both kind of, you know, in the short term, but then also in the long term? Like, you know, do you think it'll spur innovation, or do you think, you know, I guess, you know, what's your take?
Well, over 90% of all cargo comes on ships. And right now, even emergency cargo goes on planes, but ships are 100 times more efficient, at least 1/100th the amount of carbon per ton mile of airplanes. And we're right now with COVID, we're having real confusions. Commercial airlines, passenger airlines, take 40% of cargo. And Warren Buffett just pulled all his stocks out of commercial airlines. So there's a huge upheaval in this transportation market. And then we have 90% on ships. But what's happening right now is these ships are carrying these critical supplies. They're carrying millions of masks and parts for incubators and things that we need for this economy just to survive. So essentially, we've had these restrictions, right? They say if a ship's been in a port less than 14 days ago, they have extra customs hurdles to go through, but they're very minor. Essentially, we have been waving these ships in, David, because we need them. And taking precautions, but waving the ships in. But two things are happening. We're not doing the full due diligence that we're going to end up doing in the future when these, you know, when we realize what needs to be done to prevent the spread of this pandemic. And we have hundreds of thousands of sailors right now who have been stuck on these ships for months and no plan and very little leadership in order to figure out how we're going to get them off, especially if we don't have the airlines to fly these guys home. They live around the world. So in the short term, I think there's going to be major disruption as we work to move these crews and set up better regulations. We're going to have ships that are going to start to be restricted. In the long term, you know, it's hard to predict, but I really hope that this, the Zoom meetings and the technology and forcing people to think different is going to force them to finally accept technology. As Scott of Cargometrics said last week, this industry is slow to change. And hopefully this has woken people up to the need of having, if not technology in the foreground, at least a technological backup to our everyday solutions.
What kinds of companies do you think are best positioned to be kind of stronger on the other side of this? I mean, obviously, you know, there's a lot of communications companies, you mentioned, you know, things like Zoom and whatever that are enabling, you know, basically enabling remote work and that kind of thing. I guess my question is, like, within the maritime industry, what kinds of like tech companies do you think are going to really benefit from this?
Well, companies like Black Sail and Cargometrics are going to be important because when you have real changes, you need the data like Cargometrics brings, and you need the algorithms to sort through that data and help humans make decisions based on that data. So I think that's the first step, is who's going to gather this data, who's going to own the data is a big question. And then who's going to process the data? That's the first step. Second step is, this logistics chain moves, focus on the cargo. You know, I love ships. Ships are my life. Ships are important, but cargo is king in this industry. It's where is the cargo going to move? Are we going to continue to manufacture in China, or are we going to have smaller distributed manufacturing closer to home? If it's closer to home, it's going to move off the mega ships onto smaller ships that are more regional. So, you know, be on the lookout for, you know, those data providers and the short sea shipping providers who do the smaller runs port to port.
So just a few months ago, the massive job creating potential of like blue tech and the blue economy seemed abundantly clear, so much so that we started this podcast. But has the crisis changed that level of optimism, do you think? And I guess what effect do you think COVID will have on kind of innovation in blue tech?
Hey, that's an excellent question. And thank you for starting this podcast. Before we do anything, we need more eyes and ears on this problem. So MARAD just released a video, and Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs, and he said what this industry has is not a lack of solutions and a lack of interest. It's a PR problem, and I agree fully. That's why I started GCaptain, and it's hard to get the word out there, right? So thank you for launching this. In the short term, the industry, there are all these reasons why it's reluctant to accept technology, but the most important is this is a dangerous profession, right? Countless times over the centuries, new technologies have been implemented on ship, and that ship has sank and people have died. And we cannot forget that fundamental fact. The Titanic sank. It was our technological marvel, and it sank, and the world took notice. So a lot of this reluctance is, hey, we're interested, but is this safe? And will this make us money? So the knee-jerk reaction of the industry whenever there are changes is not to press ahead, it's to pull back. Become safer. Regroup, reorganize. So I think in the short term, that's what's going to happen. It's going to hurt innovation. It's going to hurt shipments. It's going to hurt logistics. Things are going to get worse before they get better. But what's important is the mindset. What are the ship owners thinking about when they're waking up in the morning, when they're having breakfast? It's not the work that gets done. It's when they go for a walk, when they sail with their buddies, when they're on the golf course in between rounds. What are they thinking about? We have to get the idea of innovation in their head. And I think COVID-19 is doing that for us. Guys who have never done a Skype or anything before are suddenly on Zoom having to figure it out. And the advantage is they're thinking about it. And they're saying, how does this relate to my business? This new tool I have. And it's laughable to say that, Skype is or Zoom is new. Sure. But yeah, to a lot of the industry, it is. And now they have this new tool. What do you want to do when you have a new tool or skill? This is a new skill that all ship owners and managers now have because of COVID. At the very least, they're going to say, How can I make money with this? How can this improve my business? So it's getting inside their head, I believe. And in the long term, it's going to be greatly beneficial.
So, you mentioned this before, but one thing I've always found pretty interesting about the shipping industry is how fragmented it is. Basically, with so many different kinds of companies around the world that have been operating for such a long time, they all sort of operate in their own like sort of different fiefdoms and operate on systems that don't necessarily communicate with each other. Do you think this fragmentation has an effect on these companies' ability to innovate or use new tech? And what could be some of the ways to bridge some of those gaps?
Absolutely. When I lived in Silicon Valley, you would go down and you would see venture capitalists and you would see guys like Mark Zuckerberg on the street, in the coffee shop. You'd chat with everyone was kind of not only working together, but socializing together. And it was a vast, diversity. Diversity is, probably the most powerful skill, opportunity. I'm not sure what you call it, but it's diversity. Any greatness America has, any greatness Silicon Valley has, is because of the diversity of this country, the diversity of the tech sector. I mean, look at where Flexport can coexist with Facebook, can coexist with Uber and Google and Apple. Apple makes hardware. Google makes just server software. Amazon's a warehouse, yet they're all making money. They're all helping each other. They're all doing products. The Amazon guy takes an Uber to work and then Uber's using Amazon server technology. It's all working together because of that diversity and international diversity, the amount of visas from people around the world coming in, you know, the cultural differences, all of this gets put in the machine and comes out a better product. So yes, I think that diversity is critical. And I don't know, like I said, you go to a tanker conference, you don't see cruise ship guys. You go to a cruise ship conference, you don't see Navy guys. We can't forget that the Navy is an important part of this too. Because all, at least American shipping companies are struggling now for various reasons. But the Navy has this huge budget and bipartisan political support. So right now is the 100th anniversary, June 8th, 4th, 8 days from now. Or is it 5th? Next week. 100th anniversary of the seminal law that says American cargo between American ports has to be shipped on American ships with American crews.
You're just getting to my next question here. This is like the perfect segue. Let me just get in
I'll
here.
I'll let you ask it then.
Well, so, you know, obviously when we talked to Scott Borgerson last week from Cargometrics, he had quite a bit to say about the future of the American shipping industry, but particularly about the Jones Act. There seems to be a lot of consensus among industry players that heavy reforms are needed. Kind of, what's your take on the Jones Act and kind of where things are going?
I think everyone agrees that the Jones Act has to be reformed. The problem is when we try to reform it, there are staunch advocates for the Jones Act, MARAD, the unions, current American shipping companies, and there are very strong interests against the Jones Act. The Cato Institute, which funded by the Koch brothers and are putting up billboards in Manhattan talking about how challenging the Jones Act is. I personally, and this is my own opinion, not GCAT or anything else, I think we have to, you know, it's going to be difficult to change the Jones Act because of this fighting. We all have to row the same boat in the same direction. And frankly, I am bullish on American maritime might. There have been vast changes to our position, a lot of it behind the scenes in the last 5 to 10 years in this country that has entered a new dynamic. So think about it, 10 years ago, and I'll start with my favorite, the longest continuously published periodical in the world was Lloyd's List. It had been printed every week for hundreds of years nonstop.
And a few years ago, for listeners who might not know what Lloyd's List is, can you sort of explain what it is?
It's a maritime news and information magazine. You had Lloyd's List, you had Informa, and you had Tradewinds. Two of them were in London, one's in Norway. Tradewinds is still doing very well. They're still a great magazine. But Lloyd's List stopped the presses and they're a shell of their former self. And now you have GCAPTAIN, a maritime executive in the United States and still Tradewinds in Norway. And in today's political climate, you need the press has leverage. You know, the laws get changed over a tweet and a blog post today. So no one's, we now have in the United States kind of the center of media might, but we're not utilizing it. Very few people come and say, hey, John, I want to write an article on GCAPTAIN, influential people. We don't have leadership taking hold of this social media and blogs. Solve these problems. And then you have the voting scheme, right? The Coast Guard votes at the IMO on new global laws. They have very few votes because we have very few ships. But the amount of ships registered in Liberia, Marshall Islands, and Panama has increased significantly. Well, the Marshall Islands' flag is run out of Virginia. Liberia's run out of New York, and Panama's in Panama. Those are North American or managed organizations. Now you have venture capital. America's number one for venture capital. America is number one for technology and innovations at places Boston, MIT, and Harvard, and Stanford, Silicon Valley. And possibly most important, You know, for the last few decades, Germany has been the number one in ship finance. Writing the checks for these big ships have been German banks. But after 2008, they pulled back. And now, with these new innovations in finance, new credit swaps and things I don't fully understand, America is now writing the most maritime checks of any country, American investors, American banks. Problem is, they're not writing checks for U.S. ships. So we have all of these amazing things. And then we have this innovation community, See Ahead, this Blue Economy podcast, all of these new things sprouting up here in America. But can we tie them together is the question. Who's going to provide that leadership and look for new ideas instead of fighting the old Jones Act battle? That's someone's got to provide that leadership to tie all of these things that America's doing great but aren't helping. They got to get everyone rowing on the same boat. And then I'm very bullish on rebuilding the U.S. Merchant Marine.
Cool. So there appears to be someone mowing the lawn behind me. Can you guys hear this? Yes, you can. Okay. Well, I only had one more question left anyway. We could just sort of cut this a little bit. The one kind of final question I had for you is, aside from things like digitization of shipping and decarbonization, what are maybe some of the big tech trends that you see developing in maritime over the next decade?
Well, you have to look at it for kind of a larger perspective. So there's this excellent book by Harvard Law professor called The Code of Capital, talking about kind of the digital fencing of the internet. And the accumulation of data and services by people like Facebook. And now Facebook's kind of put this fence around personal information. Google's put this fence around search and big data. Amazon's put this fence around the server and the mechanics of it. So we're at an inflection point. Is someone going to come in and put a fence around the maritime data of the cargo? There are entities trying, like Maersk and IBM with the TradeLens software. And it's unclear if this is going to eventually be open source or proprietary. I mean, Silicon Valley professes open source and net neutrality. But at the end of the day, to make money, Google's not disclosing the innards of how their search algorithm is so good. So that's the next thing to look at, is this data, is it going to be remain open source? Like AIS is freely broadcast and fairly collected by anyone with an antenna can collect and analyze this data. Or is it going to be closed? Who's going to own it? So I think less technology, it's really the legal, the legality and the business metrics behind this. But those kind of follow innovation. So first someone has to come up with ideas and implement the small ideas. And then the lawyers and the businessmen figure out how to corral it and put the fences up. So we don't even have the ideas now. So I think the ideas that are going to get the funding, the ideas that are going to get the political support, are those ones that can be corralled. And then as an industry, hopefully through GCaptain and Blue Economy podcast, if we can keep a light shining on what is happening, hopefully we can keep, it might be impossible to keep, to tear down the fences or keep the fences down entirely. But at least if we do this intelligently, we can put roads through the fences and doors and gates and that are open to everyone. So that's, I'm an optimist, I believe, but it's the technology solutions, the big data, the AI, the marine robotics, the companies like Cargometrics and Black Sail, and there are a number of other ones who are getting the most interest from the big money players, who are eventually going to put that capital into it. And the capital is the slow speed diesel. It's that giant engine that pushes this forward.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast, and great to see you. We'd love to catch up again sometime soon.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for doing this. This is I'm enjoying this podcast very much.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Blue Economy Podcast, presented by Rhode Island, the Ocean State. And thanks again to Captain John Conrad for joining us today. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. And if you want to learn more about us, catch up on past episodes, or shoot us a note with your comments, head over to our website at www.blueeconomypodcast.com or look us up on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. From Providence, Rhode Island, I'm your host, David Hirschman. Thanks for listening.